The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Say a prayer for all the Americans and our allies stranded by Joe Biden in Afghanistan this morning. The headline of the day on this Thursday, September the 2nd, 2021, is the same in every newspaper. Supreme Court breaking silence won't block Texas abortion law, according to the New York Times. Supreme Court refuses to block Texas law backing abortions at 6 weeks, says the Washington Post. Supreme Court declined to block restrictive Texas abortion law, says the Wall Street Journal. This is good news. This is great news, in fact. It is not the final decision. It is not a reversal of Roe v. Wade and Casey v. Planned Parenthood. I think we have to wait for that until next year. I'll come back and read you the one paragraph opinion. But it suggests that come the fall, full argument, at least five justices will strike down Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood. Casey. The major story remains thousands of Americans, American citizens, green card holders, and allies are abandoned in Afghanistan trying desperately to get out. The Financial Times reminds us in a column by Philip Stevens, the United States will not find security behind its borders. There is a story in the Washington Post that U.S. consular officials in Kabul struggled with surging crowds and painful choices. Well, their painful choices weren't nearly as painful as the choices made by those who decided to go home and hide because they couldn't get through. Karl Rove has a terrific editorial that I will read for you later on Joe Biden's ugly defense of his Afghan failure. There are other stories as well. China warns U.S. that strained relations could sink climate cooperation as China plays its climate card. They're going to try and blackmail carbon reductions in exchange for the suppression of Hong Kong, the genocide of the Uyghurs, possibly invasion of Taiwan. John Kerry might be scared about that. I'm not. They won't change it anyway. And then finally, on Afghanistan, the New York Times headlines, GOP assails the pullout it had supported under Trump. That is absolutely not true. The GOP never supported a pullout like this. They supported a phased withdrawal of troops based on conditions of the Doha Agreement. They would never have agreed to give up Bagram. How do I know this? Well, I've talked to not only former President Trump, but former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo twice, the National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, Leader McConnell, Leader McCarthy of the Senate and House, respectively. I've talked with Senator Tom Cotton three times, Senator Joni Ernst twice. I've talked to most of the veterans in the United States House of Representatives who fought in this war, Congressman Jim Banks, Congressman Dan Crenshaw, Congressman Michael Waltz, Congressman Scott Franklin. I've talked to Republicans far and wide. No one would have done it this way. No one would have abandoned Bagram. It could have been done even if we are going to abandon Bagram without loss of life. The 13 Marines who were killed, it would have been done with all of our allies out. I spoke about this yesterday as I moderated a forum at the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda with House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy and former National Security Robert O'Brien the day after President Joe Biden's disgraceful attempt to shift blame to everybody but himself. Here is Kevin McCarthy at the Nixon Library with a message from him, his party, and all Americans, cut number 25.
Leader of the House GOP, one of the two leaders of the Republican Party in office right now. What is your message to the party in a nonpartisan moment of defeat and retreat and crisis?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. It's been a tragic couple weeks. My first message, not just to the party, but to the nation. We have 13 more Gold Star families. We have thousands upon women and men who have served us for the last 20 years in Afghanistan. My first message is to them, job well done. You did exactly what we asked. You kept us safe for the last 20 years. The decision what took place within the last month solely rests on the Biden administration. We now find from this article but they don't support it either. You know, to be a successful president, you have to have the faith, the trust, and the confidence of the American public. I think this president of this last month has lost that in so many different ways. But what we need to do right now and focus, I just came back from D.C. yesterday. I was on the floor hoping, because we had what is called pro forma, that we can take action. We tried this a couple weeks before when the Democrats voted against us. Just four simple things that we should focus on. We have a Congressman, Mike Gallagher, offered the bill. First of all, President Biden early on, just on the 19th, said the mission will not end until every American comes home. Well, that didn't hold true. Earlier in the month, they said there were somewhere between 11,000 to 15,000 Americans, and they tells us they got 5,600 out. But somehow that math equals up to less than 200. What is your plan if you knowingly left by leaving Americans? What is your plan to get all Americans out? That should be everybody's mission. Secondly, what is the accounting of the amount of weaponry we have left the Taliban? We know they now have an air force bigger than one-third of every NATO country. As O'Brien likes to say, more Blackhawks than Australia. And they're going to utilize these, or they're going to sell them to our adversaries. Next is no cash for the Taliban. And very last, the big concern that we have, we should not recognize the Taliban. But that's a different thing that I've been hearing.
Stephen McCarthy yesterday, Robert O'Brien at the Nixon Library, went over the Doha Accord again, cut number 27.
Ambassador O'Brien, former President Trump, former Secretary of State Pompeo, and you have all said on the air to me in the last 2 weeks, the Doha Agreement did not oblige us to conduct ourselves in this fashion. And the former president said to me, O'Brien was the envoy for hostage affairs. I brought home 55 Americans. I would never have left Americans. Can you expand on what the conversation with the Taliban leader was that the president had, which I believe you were on along with Secretary of State Pompeo, and what his attitude would have been towards leaving Americans behind?
Well, I can tell you the first thing, Hugh, and thank you for that question. And first, I want to join the leader in expressing our condolences to the families of the soldier, sailor, and the Marines who were lost. I think a lot of the Marines came from Camp Pendleton just down the road from here. They're great Americans and fallen heroes. And the toughest thing you have to do as the President of the United States or as the National Security Advisor when you join the President or represent him is to go to Dover for those dignified transfers of our fallen heroes and bring them home. And so that was, and I went, I think, half a dozen times, never in a situation where we had 13 Americans coming home, as we saw in those pictures. And so our hearts and our prayers go out to the families of the fallen, and God bless them. And that goes for all the folks that served us, and especially those who lost life and limb and their families in Afghanistan over the past 20 years. And I agree with the speaker to be the minority leader they did great work for the United States of America. They deserve our gratitude and our thanks. And we don't want another situation like happened with Vietnam, where our veterans, it took years for our veterans to be recognized for their sacrifice. And we need to recognize them now. So let me start with that. Let me go talk briefly about the issue. Number one, the president believed in America first. And what that really meant, people didn't understand what America first meant to the president. That meant putting the American people first. So my first job in the administration was as a presidential envoy for hostage affairs. And that was going out to get folks like Pastor Brunson and Danny Burch and others, Zhijiao Wang, who was in Iran, going around the world to try and get Americans who were either wrongfully detained by foreign governments or who were held hostage by terrorist organizations and bringing them home. And we did it without paying ransom. We did it by employing our military, and we did it through very tough negotiations. I'm very concerned that my predecessor is a good man, Roger Carstens, Ambassador Carstens. He may be in a situation, Hugh and Kevin, where he's got hundreds of Americans that he has to get back. And he's going to lack leverage in those negotiations because we don't have Bagram. I mean, President Trump would have never shut Bagram. And if he ever did, it would have been the last thing he shut down. He would have bombed it to make sure it wasn't useful to the Chinese or the Russians or anyone else. But we've got very little leverage now to negotiate with the Taliban or ISIS, whoever takes these or holds these Americans. And so Roger's going to have a tough road to hoe, and we're going to have to keep him and the administration and everyone in our prayers who's trying to bring those Americans home. But they've left a very difficult situation for us. President Trump made it very clear in the Oval Office on numerous occasions to General Milley, to myself, to others, no Saigon-style withdrawal from Afghanistan. President Trump wanted to get out of Afghanistan. We wanted to pivot to China, the existential threat to our country. But we wanted to get out of Afghanistan with honor and dignity. So no Saigon-style departure, and unfortunately that's what we had. No Americans left behind. No Afghan interpreters or other enablers left behind. And this really bothered the president. No American military equipment left behind. I mean, the Taliban may not be able to operate this equipment, but the Iranians can. And the Iranians are going to come in for the biggest news car.
This is why the headline in the New York Times that on Afghanistan GOP assails the pullout it supported under Trump is simply not true. No one in the GOP supported this Saigon-style collapse or the total abandonment of our allies or leaving Americans behind. More coming up on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Not alive. I brought my relief factor with me to the West Coast. I'm going back to D.C. today. There's my relieffactor.com. I mean, sitting in the airplane for another. This is going to be a long one today because we're heading into the aftermath of the hurricane winds. It's going to be a seven-hour flight today, I think. But I have my relieffactor.com, and when I take my relief factor, I can even put up with sitting on an airplane. I hate airplane seats worse than long car drives. You just find it difficult to get up and walk around. But you got to do that, and you got to stay active. And then tomorrow, back on the highways and byways of the Beltway. ReliefFactor.com costs $19.95. Great sponsor of this show. If you enjoy this show, if you've enjoyed all these interviews, the accurate interviews of what the disaster in Afghanistan is and what will be ongoing commitment to keep you informed about the people in Afghanistan, the ones we left behind, that Joe Biden left behind, then buy and try ReliefFactor.com. Support our sponsors. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Ambassador Michael Oren, longtime ambassador from Israel to the United States, former deputy minister of the Israeli government, joining us from Israel. Good morning, Dr. Oren. How are you?
I'm fine, Hugh. Good to see you.
You have dealt with many presidents over many years. The Israeli Prime Minister Bennett just wrapped up a visit to the United States in chaos. What have you heard about that trip and about President Biden generally and the collapse of the American position abroad in the last 3 weeks?
Well, many things. I've been on the news a lot here, and the question is whether Biden was awake during the meeting. A lot of Israelis thought maybe he had fallen asleep, and I try to explain that he probably hadn't been asleep for several nights. The big question is what Israel got out of it. The president said that if negotiations fail with the Iranians, they would consider other options. And that could, some people sounded very good, but to other people, and that includes myself, what he's not saying is that all options are on the table. So he seems to be ruling out a military response, which is very important. More crucially, he didn't say what would be America's position should Israel have to act alone against Iran. Will Israel enjoy American logistic political, diplomatic, even legal support in such a case. He's not saying that. He didn't even say that Israel had the right to defend itself against Iran. I'd hope at very least he would say that. So our Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, said that Israel would not criticize the United States if it sought to renew the 2015 nuclear arms deal. It's probably good that the deal is it's a done deal. It's little we can do to influence it. But I'd like to know what we got in return for our silence. And it seems to me that should have come with a certain amount of quid pro quo. Generally speaking, Israelis are looking at the Afghani situation and saying, my God, because it's a triple whammo for us. It's not one. It's not just that our ultimate ally suffered this type of humiliating defeat. It's also to whom they suffered the defeat. It's to the Taliban, who are a theological and strategic ally of Hamas, of ISIS, of Al-Qaeda, all the people who are seeking to destroy us. And the third reason, and I think that that's in the headlines today, is that the Taliban have acquired an untold arsenal of the most sophisticated American arms. And those arms are going to be coming to a neighborhood near us in the very near future.
Now, Ambassador, and you're a historian. Before you made Aliyah, you were an American teaching at Princeton. You've been, of course, now an Israeli citizen for many years, but you know the presidency. Has any American president in modern times appeared this week disorganized, catastrophically prepared for disaster?
that's like too political even for me. But I will say that Barack Obama is one of the two leaders in history that I know you who voluntarily dismantled a world empire and cloaked it in virtue. You know who the other one was?
No.
That's the teacher in me coming up. The other one was Gorbachev.
Ah, okay.
It's amazing. These two gentlemen both, you know, in a relatively short period of time, historically speaking, dismantled their world empires and cloaked it in virtue. And today, I think there's a significant amount of opinion, certainly on the progressive side of the American political spectrum, that views American power as a bad thing, and that the reduction of American power is a good thing. I see the New York Times keeps on running articles on the need to cut back on American military spending, always focusing on all the bad things that the American military did in the world over the last 50, 60 years. They forget that millions, perhaps billions of people on this planet owe their freedom to American military might.
You know, there's a desperate attempt, Dr. Warren, the New York Times headline today on Afghanistan GOP assails the pullout it had supported under Trump. No, it did not support this kind of a pullout under Trump. I've had 20 interviews with everyone from the former president and former secretary Mike Pompeo to almost every veteran in Congress, all from senior Republican. Nobody supported this. Nobody in the Biden administration supports this. He's getting blasted by his own administration figures who are leaking like mad to make sure that they don't get this stain on them. When I say, has there ever been as catastrophic a conduct of a foreign policy emergency as this? I don't think it's political. I think it's historic. You might say the Bay of Pigs, but I don't think it would have the significance of this.
The big question is what comes next for us, too. You know, I always say that the President Biden can take a page out of the playbook from President Ford. You don't often say that, right?
Right.
Ford turned around after the fall of Saigon in 1975, and he launched major international diplomatic initiatives, the SALT II talks, Helsinki Accords, and the Sinai I and Sinai II Accords, which Kissinger achieved through shuttle diplomacy between Cairo and Jerusalem, a famous shuttle diplomacy that laid the groundwork for peace between Egypt and Israel. So America was able to come back. It came out of the Saigon fiasco sort of punching. And I would really hope that the administration would do that, not in Tehran and not in Ramallah. But look for Sadat. Look for Sadat in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. If the administration would embrace the Abraham Accords and expand them and renew the Pax Americana in the Middle East, there's a way out of this yet, Hugh.
I hope you're right. I am not an optimist because this does not seem to be an American president capable of any bold moves. Dr. Michael Oren, thank you. Follow him on Twitter at Dr. Michael Oren.
Secret notebook of Nikola Tesla with his most dangerous formulas could fall into the hands of evolutionary elite scientists.
His most amazing discoveries thought to be written in a lost journal. In the right hands, it could revolutionize the 21st century.
They want to start a new world order where elites rule and everyday people are not created equal.
Look out!
Now the elites plan to set off an earthquake under LA to take out world leaders.
There's an old brown battered notebook in my office at work. You have to find it, take it, and keep it hidden at all costs.
Let's just say there are a lot of enemies of the state interested in his research.
It's up to regular people to stop them. A grad student, a campus cop, a deaf army vet, and a group of live action role players.
A vertical quake this size could collapse half of Dontop.
Catch Final Frequency, playing exclusively on SalemNow.com or download the mobile app. For more information, visit FinalFrequencyFilm.com.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by former United States Senator Jim Talent, who is now with the Bipartisan Foreign Policy Center, the Bipartisan Center in Washington, D.C. Senator Talent, I have in my hand a New York Times article from this morning, the headline of which is, On Afghanistan, GOP assails the pullout it had supported under Trump. I believe this is just fake news. I've had on 20 Republicans, from former President Trump to McConnell and McCarthy and O'Brien and Pompeo and every veteran in the House I can find. No one would have in the Republican Party supported the policy that we've seen catastrophically unfold. Not Liz Cheney. No one. Even people who opposed the Delaware Agreement. Am I correct?
Oh, well, who could possibly support this, you? I mean, Democrats are not supporting this. I mean, the president had two viable options. One would have been to repudiate Trump's policy, which I would have preferred, and I said in a column a week ago Sunday. The other would be to carry out the evacuation in a thoughtful and energetic way. And he didn't do either one. And then every time he gives a speech, you said this and you're correct, he digs the hole deeper. So the last speech was, it was a great success, and everybody but me is responsible for the failure.
Yeah. And that is true. That's what he said.
That's what he said. And you, I have to tell you, I was listening to what our friend Robert O'Brien was saying and what Kevin McCarthy was saying. They are correct. And I tell you, the administration is making it worse with everything that they do, undermining our credibility more. I think there are people around the world starting to wonder whether you know, our president has the capacity to do the job.
After the break, next hour, I'm going to play advice that Ambassador O'Brien and Kevin McCarthy gave to the American people, worried about the hundreds of Americans and thousands of allies trapped in Afghanistan. What do you think we ought to do about these people right now, Senator Talent? We're not going to forget them. We're going to talk about them every day.
Right. Part of the problem with a decision this bad is you end up with almost no options. Now, I think there is a cognizable chance that the Taliban will play nice for a while and will let most of our people go. I think there's a high risk that, however, that they won't, or that they'll trump up charges against a couple of dozen of them, or, and this is another problem, they may not be able to consolidate control. That's how bad this is. If they consolidate control of the country, that's not good for us. But if they don't, that's not good for us either.
Yeah, so, I cannot imagine the Haqqani network joined at the hip with al-Qaeda and part of the Taliban coalition, whose leader was in jail 6 years at Bagram, allowing every American that falls into their hands to leave. I just can't imagine it, Jim.
Right. I agree with you. I think there's a very high risk that they'll figure out some, and they have a lot of, they're the ones who have the options, a lot of different options for how to hold some American backs. And of course, you know, the Afghans we wanted to get out, they're just, well, we know what's going to happen to them, or the vast majority of them. And people around the world are watching this. The ASEAN countries are watching this. The other countries in South Asia are watching this. The Gulf states are watching this. And our enemies are watching this and probably advancing their plans to test us further to see if they can induce more mistakes like this.
I want to get your emphasis, Senator Tom. I don't think there is a more critical moment in America moving forward than what we do in Afghanistan over the next month. We are going to be haunted by what happened in the last month, but then we're going to be boxed in and crippled by what we do in the next month. Am I correct in that assessment?
Well, I think there's a very high risk of that, you. I mean, I think the Taliban, the Haqqani network, even ISIS, probably cannot yet believe their good fortune. So my guess is they're trying to work out exactly how they're going to exploit this, but whatever they decide to do is not going to be good for us.
They have so many options right now that they're paralyzed by option choice.
And they have the initiative.
Yes.
We have given up our options. I agree, by the way, with every alternative Robert O'Brien suggests, except I would add this. You know, the Senate Armed Services Committee increased the top line authorization by about $25 billion. The Biden administration needs to come out and say it wants that money. It wants the Congress to appropriate to that authorization, that it's going to increase the defense budget by at least the 3% in real terms that they should have proposed in the first place. That's probably the best thing we could do right now to firm up our credibility around the world.
But you know the temptation of sunk cost, Jim Talent. Last question. When you've made horrific decisions like Joe Biden has made, the temptation is to just keep digging in, ignoring the sunk cost and the hope that nobody notices. You serve with President Biden for 6 years when he was in the Senate. Does he have the capacity to change and reflect and see the disaster he has created?
Well, I think when people suffer, you know, politically and they're attacked and assailed on all sides, they tend to get better, you know. Now, look, we can't ignore the fact that there are issues here regarding his capacity. But certainly his advisors have got to understand the disaster that this is and have got to be seeking some way to bring us back.
I pray you're right. There are hundreds of American lives on the line and then consequences into the generations ahead of us. That's why I'm staying focused on the debacle in Afghanistan. Don't go anywhere, America. Thank you, Jim Talent. Follow him on Twitter at Jim Talent. Follow me to the next hour of today's Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Morning Glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live in California this morning, returning to the Beltway later today, joined by Michael Scheer of the New York Times. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I do want to be honest with you. I've spent 2 hours beating up on your newspaper's story this morning. It's not your story. It's by Reid Epstein and Katie Edmondson, titled On Afghanistan, GOP Assails the Pullout It Had Supported Under Trump. And the reason I'm doing that is because in the last 3 weeks, Michael, I've had 20 interviews with former President Trump, twice with Pompeo, twice with O'Brien, Leader McConnell, Leader McCarthy, Bill Hagerty, Nikki Haley, every veteran in the House, Dan Crenshaw, Michael Waltz, Mike Gallagher, Jim Banks, Scott Franklin. I've also had on, you know, Liz Cheney, everybody that I can find. I've had Dan Crenshaw on. None of them support the Joe Biden policy, and none of them are changing their position. Some of them criticized the Doha agreement, like Liz Cheney, but she admitted Donald Trump wouldn't have done this. Donald Trump said he wouldn't have done this. I just think this is an absolutely misleading story. Now, it's not your story. I never criticize my colleagues. I'm not asking you to. But do you think if we're going to report on what Republicans believed about withdrawing, we ought to read and listen to the recent interviews, as well as the old statements of the president, the secretary of state, the national security advisor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Sure, I do. And I, you know, I think, you know, there's always, I mean, you know, you're right. You have to listen to an interview, and you know, I don't know what Reid and Katie did, but in terms of reporting, I'm sure they did a lot of reporting as well. I think that there is the question of, you know, Republicans who, when the former president was pursuing a withdrawal from Afghanistan, they were not, the criticism was muted. The fact that the withdrawal is now being, it was now concluded and pursued by a Democratic president, you know, criticism is not as muted as, and in fact is quite harsh. And so I think that's a legitimate, you know, thing to point out and a legitimate area of inquiry for journalistic inquiry.
And Michael, this is where I think apples and oranges are being mixed. It is certainly legitimate to ask, what did you think of the Doha agreement and the last 18 months of President Trump's presidency vis-a-vis Afghanistan? I was uneasy with it, but I also believe that the conditions attached to it would have prevented the withdrawal of the 2,500 Americans, 5,000 NATO troops in air power. I know, I have now asked the same question, what do you think of the Biden policy? Of everybody who matters in the Republican Party, they all condemn it, because they withdrew from Bagram, they did not establish, they did not get every American out, they did not get the SIVs done. There's an attempt to conflate the Doha agreement with what has happened. What has happened has got nothing to do with the Doha agreement. They're just completely different. And I think 100% of the Republicans are opposed to what Joe Biden has done. Probably 50% applauded Doha, 50% didn't, but nobody. In fact, Democrats don't support what Joe Biden has done. It's an utter catastrophe.
Well, look, I think the thing that you, the absolutely right thing that you're zeroing in on is the same thing that as a reporter I've been pressing the Biden administration for the past 3 weeks on, and that is the clarity and the difference between the underlying policy of withdrawal versus how it was executed in these last few weeks, right? And the president, the current president, is, and the people around him are intent on focusing on the underlying policy. Joe Biden, in speech after speech, has come back to the question of, this is why I believe that we had to end this war, this 20-year war. I think, journalists, including myself, have been pressing this administration to focus on, okay, that's fine, put that to the side. How come it was executed the way it was executed? And I think that has been the focus of my journalism. I think that's been the focus of a lot of journalism over the last 4 weeks. And I do think that those two questions are different questions. And to the extent that it gets conflated, I think it gets conflated in some ways on both sides. You don't see Donald Trump standing up for Joe Biden's policy. Again, not the way it was executed, but the underlying policy of withdrawal, which you would think that if there was consistency, you would see that kind of support for the current president from Republicans, which you don't.
Okay, now the reporters are not responsible for headlines. I like to remind my column readers that that's true. The headline is, on Afghanistan, GOP assails the pullout it had supported under Trump. That's simply not true, Michael. They did not support this kind of a pullout. Nobody. And that's because everything was conditions-based, and the Taliban was supposed to achieve a coalition government through negotiation and without American casualties and while in control and in cooperation with the United States government. And they broke that deal when they attacked specifically Chapman, Forward Operating Base Chapman, in March, and they wounded seven Americans. That was the big red line for me. They broke the Doha, was no longer relevant. Isn't it important for the paper of record to communicate to people that the Doha agreement had nothing to do with getting out everyone on a specified date and leaving people behind? We would never have left Americans behind under any Republican. Trump would never have done that.
Well, okay, so a couple of things there. Of course, details are important. Details are something that everybody needs to focus on, and you need to make sure that those details are communicated effectively. But again, I think the question of of course, nobody is going to write a policy that says, we support a policy in which the United States leaves Afghanistan and leaves people behind. Nobody is going to support that. But the question of whether or not, Republicans, and in particular the president and the former president and his supporters, wanted to be out of Afghanistan, wanted to withdraw all troops out of Afghanistan and end the forever wars, was a policy that they supported. Of course, they wouldn't have wanted it to happen the way that it happened, and those are legitimate differences that have to be noted. But I think that it is a fair point to say to Republicans, to remind Republicans and to remind readers, look, the overall policy was one that Republicans supported, with different details and in different ways, and they obviously don't support the way it was done. But that's not an illegitimate thing to remind people.
I think it is, because I think it's an agenda. I don't think this story is not reminding them of that. If they want to go back and say, here's what Republicans are saying right now, and then find an inconsistency and report that, that's reporting. This is, quote, analysis, and it's not very good analysis because it doesn't point out Republicans were not threatening withdraw contractor support, which we did. Republicans were not going to accelerate withdrawal ahead of Americans, and we were not going to pull all of our allies out without any kind of support structure. This just wasn't on the table ever. And the idea that it is the job of the media in the middle of a crisis to remind the American people that Joe Biden has done something that might have been supported by some Republicans before is not, I don't think that's reporting. I think that's agenda journalism. But I want to close by looking ahead. I don't think there's a more important story in the world than what happens in Afghanistan in the next 3 months. We've never been in this position before. I talked to the special envoy and former national security advisor Robert O'Brien yesterday at length with Kevin McCarthy at the Nixon Library. It's on tape. It's posted. There's never been a hostage crisis like this. It's five times, six times, seven times as big as the Iranian hostage crisis. Will it get the same amount of attention that the Iranian hostage crisis did, Michael Scheer?
I hope so. I hope that we, you know, as a country and as a media, that we don't just move on. I think, you know, it's a harder story. It's a hard story to tell because we don't, no longer have people there, by and large, journalists. But I think that assuming that things proceed as the way I fear, and I think we all fear that they do, which is to say that there are, you know, lots of stories of people desperate to get out and a Taliban regime that is not permitting them to do so. Look, we as journalists, I mean, since you asked the question about the media, we as journalists have been covering this war for 20 years. This is not something we're going to just forget.
I hope that's right. The atrocity stories, I'm not repeating them till they're confirmed, but about the LGBT community, about SIV interpreters and their families, about the college kids, they're blood curdling, and we cannot avert our eyes because it hurts Joe Biden, and a partisan press will do that. I don't think that's you, Michael Scheer. Please keep coming back. Good luck in keeping the focus on the story, the real story. I'll be right back, America, on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.